Hey gang, dig it. Are you in a band in Austin and you're trying to make the leap from band of schmoes to full-on pros? Well, listen, you need to get out of your house, you need to get out of the garage, you need to get over to Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art, affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. I rehearse there, and I love it, man. We got a room there, my band Skyrocket. We love rehearsing down at Space. It's a great place to work out your stuff, man. Call them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talk.
All right, hello. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. The great David Polkingham is here. You might know him as a guitar player that's currently on tour with Patty Griffin, his many years with Alejandro Escovedo, his playing with Robert Plant while Robert Plant was here in Austin, Darden Smith, Amy Cook, so many, all of the Latin bands. Well, guess what? David Polkingham made a solo album called Little Pearl. It came out last Friday. It features Patty Griffin, Lloyd Maines, the Tosca String Quartet, and many, many more. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous album. And he's having a record release party tonight, August 25th, at Rockwood Music Hall in New York City. He goes on at 8:30. And then Saturday, August 29th, which is this coming Saturday, he will be at Strange Brew at 7 p.m. doing a record release there. This album is absolutely great, and we have a fantastic conversation. I've always liked David. He's always been such a sweet guy and such a great talent. I suggest you get out and pick up those David Polkingham Plays Guitar albums, too, after you get Little Pearl. Check those out. They're really great to listen to, man. Throw them on a Sunday morning. Chill out. Read something. Read your flipboard. Do people read the paper? Do you get the paper anymore? I don't know. I don't know if I get the paper. I had a great weekend playing with Skyrocket. We played here in Austin on Friday, and then we played a wedding in Houston on Saturday at this gorgeous place called the Corinthian. You know, Friday's show was a little wonky. There was something weird going on. There was a weird energy. I don't think so much with us. I just think there was a weird energy and an odd connection with the crowd. It wasn't like it normally is for us, which was strange. Kind of throws you off when that happens. You get some weird energy from the crowd. Not like they were a bad crowd. It was just weird energy in the room, and we responded to it accordingly by feeling a little weird ourselves. But it was still a really good show. This show Saturday, that wedding, that was fantastic, man. Usually those are really fun, you know? So, you know, it's the best day of someone's life. I saw a guy that was a young guy, probably 25 to 30, okay? Good-looking guy. Looked like a cross between Jason Mantzoukas and my friend Joseph King. And he danced like Danny Terrio. He had these dance moves that, like, you don't think somebody his age would have. He had all these classic, like, soul train dance moves. You know what I mean? Like, 70s groovy moves. And he knew the actual moves and the dances, and he moved according to the music. Anyway, he was very impressive. I don't know who this guy was, but I appreciated his dancing. Danny Terrio style, kicking it on the dance floor, okay? Hey, guys, I want to tell you about Utopia Fest. This is the seventh one. It's coming up on September 4th through 6th in Utopia, Texas. I got to sit down with Travis Sutherland, the guy that runs that festival and owns it, or, you know, owns the land. It's a great story. They've got a great lineup this year. Explosions in the Sky, Of Montreal, Wild Child, Sphinx, Riders Against the Storm, Bone, Fur, and Feathers, so many more, okay? Let's talk to Travis Sutherland and see what's going on with Utopia Fest. This is the seventh Utopia Fest.
Number seven.
Yeah.
It's so hard to believe, but here we are.
What are you from? Are you from there?
I grew up there from when I was in third grade to when I graduated high school, which was about 93 to 03. But the ranch has actually been in my family for about 100 years, and I'm the fifth generation to have lived on it.
Wow.
Yeah. And in the past, it's just been used for various types of farming and ranching and, you know, good old cowboy stuff.
Yeah, were you what inspired you to do it? Was it Woodstock? Because that's on a, that was on a farm, you know, right?
We've always drawn so many comparisons. I mean, there are definitely some overlap, but it's certainly its own thing. But, you know, music was always super integral to my life growing up. My family on
How
both
are you
sides
getting
very
it
musical.
Out there? I mean, were bands coming through Utopia?
Not at all. I mean, really, a lot of my musical upbringing was like through, you know, church type things. But we got like two radio stations, and that's where I got most of my limited education at the time. But and I also
what did the stations play? Like everything?
I was, you know, my what I had it. For the most part, was like, you know, 90s grunge type stuff. But, you know, but being out there, I also got a good dose of, you know, the classic country and all the way to like the 90s, beginning of the end of country. And but yeah, it was definitely pretty limited range of music that I was exposed to back then. But I mean, I went to Texas State after I graduated, and then like my, you know, horizons just, you know, obviously exploded, and I started getting into all kinds of genres and new things and going to shows.
I'm going to get these guys and bring them back to the farm.
Well, you know, I mean, just, and I started going to a lot of shows and being involved in production. I started doing security at a bunch of different shows and festivals, and I got dabbled in a little video, and I even like played some shows and stuff. So throughout that process, I just made these relationships with all these bands that are really awesome. And there's one band that I signed in particular. It was the Thrustor Cowboys that I had actually moved to San Antonio in 2009, and I came up to see them somewhere here in town. And after that show, I was like, it just really dawned on me like how many great bands I knew personally. And like, and at the same time, I'd also been realizing how blessed I was to have this amazing piece of property and the family that no one ever gets to see. So, and I'd been trying to get my friends out there and stuff. And it just kind of dawned on me, like, we have an awesome place for a festival or for a concert even. So I wanted to give people around Utopia the opportunity to see music, and I wanted to give people from outside of Utopia the opportunity to experience what it's like
Utopia.
To be out on this land. Yeah. You know, because a lot of people have no idea that that type of country exists, you know, anywhere near here, anywhere in Texas, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible land. I mean, untouched by civilization. It's like, how often do you get to go to a place like that where there's no light pollution, there's no sound pollution? It's just like you and nature and like, that's it, you know. So it's even with 2,000 people, it's still such a powerful experience, you know. And, you know, most cell phones don't work, you know. So it's also a chance to completely unplug from technology, you know, and just really experience real interaction with people, you know. And because it's so small, like it lends itself to making really strong connections and new friends.
Yeah.
Every year, you know. So.
That's amazing. And so this year is the 7th one.
Right.
Are you're still stoked about it?
It
hasn't worn you down?
Not at all. I mean, it's blows my mind. I mean, especially when I'm out there, I'm just looking around and like when I'm seeing some of my absolute favorite bands in the world, like in my backyard, it's just surreal.
Yeah.
You know, and it's I never would have dreamed it would be even like a part-time job, which it kind of is. And just all like the, like I said, the amazing friendships and business relationships and just, you know, we're having a wedding this year. We've had a proposal, and just all kinds of,
what are the amenities? Like, let's get into this. So you can go out there and you camp.
Right. Okay. So it's pretty much primitive camping.
Go Friday through Sunday.
Yeah. There's like the pre-party of sorts on the Friday and then Saturday night, and Sunday night. So you have the opportunity to camp out there for all three nights. And it's, for the most part, it's primitive, but we just, built some new showers that are quite nice. Yeah.
So you go in the morning and you can shower.
Yeah, we'll have them open pretty much all day, even when it gets dark. And it's really cool because you can like see the stars whenever you're taking a shower.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
You can also you can cook. Like what's cool is you can bring out everything you're gonna need. So like once you buy your ticket, like you can be done if you want. As far as giving us money, you can like take out everything.
Oh, right. You can bring your own food. Bring your own drinks.
Camping's free. Parking's free. You just bring out whatever you want. And even if you don't want to bring a stove, like REI is actually coming on board in a huge way this year, and they're going to have like a community camp cooking area where they have stoves.
Cool.
Yeah. And they're going to have a dishwashing station. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about say you don't
want to camp?
You're not equipped to cook and do all this stuff, or is there going to be food available?
Oh, there are going to be food vendors. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of them from Austin, and even my cousin's a caterer. who's going to be doing a lot. And we actually have the Guinness record for the biggest commercially available pizza.
Oh,
that's
really?
It's going to be there. Yeah, wow. It's always a huge hit.
Okay. And so there's one stage?
There's two actually. Stages. And so they just alternate. So it's back and forth all day. So once it starts, it's like nonstop amazing music.
And what time does it start?
Friday is like the pre-party, and it'll be starting at about 8, and then Saturday and Sunday it'll be 1 to 2 p.m. all the way, and then in the main stages, they're both main stages, will go all the way till about 1 or 2 a.m., so about 12 hours.
12 hours of music.
And then after that, we quiet it down some, but it keeps, the party still goes on pretty hard with a silent disco, where there's 3 channels of music you can listen to in headphones. And then we have what we call Tank Good Times, borrowed from Camp Good Times from Old Settlers and other festivals, where we have completely unplugged sets on the side of a hill in front of this water tank.
Oh, where people are just playing.
Yeah, it's completely unplugged. Yeah, wow. And we have some of the bands from the lineup and a couple that aren't. And we shush the crowd. So
yeah, of course. You got to.
Yeah, we literally do. So there's 100 to 200 people all completely just engaged in the performance. And, it's a really unusual and special.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Utopia Fest, which takes place September 4th through 6th, 2015. This is the 7th one, man. Congratulations, Travis.
Well, thank you.
It features this year, we've got Explosions in the Sky, Leftover Salmon for Two Nights, Tune Yards, RJD2, Charles Bradley and His Extraordinaires of Montreal, Man Man, Wild Child, Who Made Who, Valerie June, The Suffers, Michael Pascaleff. Is that how you say it?
Well, he's the one on there that actually had to cancel, but we're so bummed. The only one.
His name's just too hard to pronounce.
But he's awesome, Pascaleff. Check him out.
Okay. I'm disparaging some dude. I'm sorry, Michael. Holiday he's Mountain, great. The Sheepdogs, Monophonics, Calliope Musicals, Hardproof, Sphinx, been on the show many times, Vinyl yes. Williams, Sip Dip, Less... Sip. Sip Sip, sorry. Yeah. One of my, I can't read. And many, many more. Riders Against the Storm and tons of people. You can go to utopiafest.com to find out when these bands are playing, because they're not all playing two nights, just Leftover Salmon.
Right. They're actually playing that first night, the pre-party, and then Saturday. But yeah, we just came out with the grid last week.
Okay.
And we're really excited about the flow of the bands, and just all 3 days are just so stacked and such a great progression. It's going to be pretty magical.
Yeah. Got stages. It's outside. It's beautiful. It's in Utopia. I mean, the place is called Utopia. Do you need any other reason to go there?
Rightfully so. It is.
People can get their tickets and all the things that they need by going to utopiafest.com.
We do cap the ticket sales at 2,000, but there are still some available as of today. So
So get out there. Mm-hmm. It's a festival. It's different than the ones that they have in town, like a Pecan Street Music or even ACL or this kind of thing, where you actually go and you're there.
Immerse yourself
in the experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need to unplug. Mm-hmm. From the phone, from all this kind of stuff, and just get out and be in the music with your people, other fans. Yeah?
Yeah, and it's the greatest group of people you can imagine. It's funny because it's a lot of the crowds, an Austin crowd, so it's almost like we have this like slice of Austin that just kind of gets transplanted out there, and like people all weekend are like, you're here? Like, oh, I can't believe you're here. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and so they can't text each other because the phones don't work. So you're just like running into people old school. Hey, what are you doing here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then we have people from, across the country and even the world that always blows me away. We're trying to be more of like a psych fest, where it's like a destination festival, where you have people from all over. That's kind of one of our goals. But yeah, it's very Austin-centric and Austin-oriented. We have some of our favorite bands in town coming out.
Well, good. Travis Sutherland. And you're on your family's property out there. How many acres is it?
The whole ranch is about 1,000 acres, but kind of the section that we're on is about 400 or so. So it's like the size. I mean, imagine the size of like Zilker Park, where ACL is, but with 2,000 people, a fraction of the crowd.
That's nice. Yeah. I'm gonna get lost. Is it easy to sort of like find a camping space? It's all kind of designated.
Oh yeah, there's no designation. Like you get picked up by a shuttle and they just go down this lane and we'll have markers this year with different colors, and you can just tell them where you want to get off at, and you can just you're free to just roam and set up wherever. I mean, and I'm always amazed like how far back or how far up the hill some people hike to set up. It's really awesome.
Yeah. Man, like, that is awesome.
Yeah, and you can actually set up within view of the stage, or you can be completely isolated where you don't see anyone all weekend if you want.
Yeah, maybe so. You're on your honeymoon. Go to the Utopia Fest. Yeah, you want to have a little privacy.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo. Any kids conceived at Utopia Fest yet?
More than likely. Yeah, more than likely.
All right. Is there anything else we should know about it?
Man.
You get your tickets at utopiafest.com. Yeah. Find out who is on the lineup and when they're playing. Mm-hmm. Two stages alternating back and forth. Some of your favorite bands from even here. Wild Child is on there of Montreal.
Yes.
Explosions in the Sky, Sphinx, Riders of the Storm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of these bands we've been going at for like years. Like Explosions, for instance, we've been trying to get them since like 2011, and it just has happened. And we would just keep on begging, and finally this year they're like, maybe this is the year it's gonna happen. And we're like, yes. And
sure enough, what night are they playing?
They're gonna be on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're gonna be the finale. It's gonna imagine be pretty epic.
You guys do some fireworks or anything out there?
Maybe. Okay. So. we started last year, and there's a brand band right now.
That's
but
good. Yeah, that's...
we'll probably do it anyway.
Gotta observe them.
We'll probably do it anyway. But
all
right. With Explosions in the Sky, like, you know, how could you not?
That just sounds, how could you have them do a finale of something at night and not have actual explosions in the sky?
Right.
Is there anything I'm missing?
Man, that is absolutely pretty comprehensive. Do join us on the website and all the other, you know, good social media stuff. We're pretty active on there.
UtopiaFest.com.
Yeah, and at UtopiaFest, all that good stuff. And
on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And you got UtopiaFest on
Instagram.
Facebook, Instagram. Yep. All right. Well, Travis Sutherland, thank you. I wish you a lot of luck with UtopiaFest this year. Congratulations on your 7th one.
Thanks, Travis. All right, man.
All right. Check it out, utopiafest.com. Get your tickets September 4th through 6th. That was Travis Sutherland. Really nice guy, man. Man, I was looking at some pictures of that place. It is gorgeous land and just gorgeous setting for a great festival. So get out there and do it, all right? Get involved. Let's talk to David Polkingham. His new album, Little Pearl, is out. You can go to davidpolkingham.com to find out exactly what to do with it. He is playing a record release party tonight, Tuesday, August 25th at 8:30 at Rockwood Music Hall in New York City, for those of you in New York City. And Saturday, August 29th, he will be playing at Strange Brew at 7 p.m. doing a record release right here in Austin, Texas. So he's also on tour with Patty Griffin, so if you go out there and see her, go up and say hi. Maybe he's got some albums for sale in the merch booth. All right, everyone have a very, very, very great week. Here's my friend David Polkingham talking about his album, Little Pearl. Let's get down.
I'll make a dress that don't have no stitches. It matches on my britches. It can't be bought or sold. I'll make you a dress, a bulletproof lining, silver needle shining. It'll never get old. The time is right. The place is now. Time to raise your veil. I'm ready now. Ready to make this vow.
So that was Tamer that used to play upstairs at the Ritz.
Tamer.
Yeah. And didn't Jimmy never play in that band for a little while?
No,
Jimmy Messer?
Jimmy Messer played in a band called Sonyuma.
Sonyuma. Did you play in that?
Well,
too?
No. What happened was kind of Sonyuma and Tom Mayer were around the same time.
Right.
And then Sonyuma ended up turning into a band called Sony No Son.
Oh, right.
That I played in that. And that was after Jimmy had left.
I saw y'all at El Sol y la Luna.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
it's so funny because we've crossed paths. I've shown up in your the Cedar Street gigs for a while.
Right, yeah.
And all that time you were playing with Alejandro?
No.
Were you playing with him for like...
I started playing with him around 2000, a couple, like a year before 2000. I did... He did By the Hand of the Father, which is a theater piece.
Yeah, I remember that.
My first gig with him was Austin City Limits doing that.
Wow.
And then kind of elbowed my way into playing into like every format that he had.
Yeah.
And that was around 2000, 2002 that started rolling. But yeah, I was in Tom Air somewhat overlapping of that time. But Tom Air really was done by around 2002, 2003.
Was that guy Joey?
Joey DeLago.
Joey DeLago.
Actually, he was.
He was in Sonuma.
No. He was in Cula du Café.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and he was the one. He got Christian Fernandez, who was a lead singer in Tom Air.
Right.
He was the one who got him over here, and then they had a parting of ways, and Christian started Tom Air.
Okay.
Without Joey.
Yeah. That guy was great. Christian. What's Christian doing now?
He's in Nice, where he's from. Okay. Yeah, playing and doing his thing. But yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, you're phenomenal.
Oh, come
Your
on.
Album, Little Pearl, is beautiful.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, man.
Thank you very much.
I
appreciate that.
I wasn't surprised, but I was just like, I mean, I was taken aback. I was like, wow, this is really just, it's gorgeous. The songs are incredible.
Thank you, man.
You're a great singer.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank
you. How you've been recording it for a while?
I started last November.
Okay.
And then it's basically been done since April.
Okay. Well, that's not long.
No, we banged out the majority of it. And then in just a couple months. And then I was working at Ohm Studios, which is over there on East 5th.
Okay.
It's a great studio. A guy called Chico Jones runs that. And I was getting in there kind of late night in between sessions and stuff.
Okay.
So it kind of ended up staggering out. And then I had some guest appearances that I ended up waiting on getting those performances and all that. So we were pretty economical about it. But,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, you have to be when you go and record in a studio. You know what I mean?
Yep, you do. Yeah, you do these days, and it's well. I mean, you just don't hear as much about like the 2 month lockout.
No, and no one's in the studio writing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're in the studio.
No one's rehearsing the stuff. No, you know, the old model's completely gone.
Yeah, I'm gonna go run out Sunset Sound and write for a few months
and come up with an album.
Yeah. How long did you have all the material? Like set?
Yeah, I kind of. Me writing songs, I do it fairly consistently, but it's a little bit at a glacial pace. I kind of poke along at it. I guess
you have a lot to do. I imagine you spend a lot of time learning songs.
I spend a lot of time playing other people's songs.
Yeah, and like learning them. Like when you listen to music, it's probably
inhabiting them, trying to get right inside them. You know.
Yeah.
So, and that's the good news. I end up being around such amazing people.
Yeah.
I feel very, very, very fortunate. I always look over and find myself next to somebody who just moves me.
Yeah.
And who's a real master.
Yeah.
So that's great, and it certainly rubs off on me. But I write, like, some of the songs are pretty old. One of them's about 8 years old. I wrote it quite a while ago.
Wow.
And I do gigs of just me solo, singer-songwriter. I don't do it a lot. I generally, if I'm in town, I'd have a residency that's once a month to do that and, you know, develop songs that way. But I've never really done them with a band.
Are you doing these release shows? Like the day that this comes out, you'll be in New York?
With the band, and then I'll do it here at Strange Brew on the 29th.
You have a different band up there?
I do.
Hiring. I notice that happens a lot.
Yeah, hiring guys up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing it Rockwood, which I love that place.
Rockwood, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Is there two rooms there now?
There's three. I'm doing the third one. It's a big one. It's like a listening room.
Okay.
Like around 60 or 70 capacity.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So try and get a lot of warm bodies in seats.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this the day that it comes out, get out to Rockwood tonight.
Yeah, that would be the 25th.
August 25th.
Exactly. Yeah.
A great night for music in New York City.
Yeah.
All right. So who's in your band up there?
It's actually, there's a guy who I co-wrote some of the songs with, who's a poet and a writer in New York. His name's Daniel Wolf.
Yeah.
His son is named Lorenzo. He has two sons. One's a song and dance guy on Broadway, and his other son's a bass player in New York.
Okay.
So, and he also has a studio in Brooklyn. So I basically got, I know him. I got in touch with him. I was like, would you play with me and bring in some of your boys, you know, drums and bass. So he got some of his guys to pitch in. And so it's, let's see, Michael Cassidy is a piano, and J.D. Pressman, I think, is a drum.
Cool. And that. They still have a piano there, right?
Yeah, they have a piano there.
That's I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to have a real piano on stage.
You know who I saw play there, like an unannounced show right after I played? The Killers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was weird.
Wow.
Yeah, man, my friend went up and played mouth trumpet as a solo. Yeah, really? It was real weird. I was really drunk, but I know it all really happened.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, I was with some people, and they all remembered it as well.
All right on.
Yeah. and so in Austin, you're doing the thing on it's the 29th. The
29th,
Saturday.
Strange Brew. Yeah.
And who's your band here?
I got Glenn Fukunaga on bass.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Longoria on drums. Yeah. And Eddie Hobazal on piano.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Eddie Hobazal produced the record.
He produced it, yeah. Exactly.
Right. Does he work out of that studio, or did you just?
He doesn't. He has his own studio, but it's not the size that we needed for doing like full band rhythm tracks at this point.
Yeah.
So, but he works with Ohm a lot. He and Chico work together a lot doing that kind of thing.
Chico Jones.
Chico Jones.
Yeah. That's a great name.
It is a great name. Yeah, he's half black, half Mexican, and his name's Chico Jones.
That's a great.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I expect the Shaft Challenge soundtrack to start playing. Like.
But then underneath, it's Lowrider too.
Yeah.
Like a mashup. Yeah. Hey, so one thing before I get to ask you some other questions,
yeah.
I want you to talk about the Kerry Rodriguez and Sacred Hearts.
Oh yeah,
and the Sacred Hearts.
Yeah,
so that's you, Brannon, Bill Frisell,
and Victor Krause on bass,
right.
And also Luke Jacobs, who's her partner and boyfriend. And we did 5 days, and banged out an album in those 5 days for her.
She could host a TV show. I was watching those videos, and I was like, she's really great.
She's really great.
Just, getting the point across and making you feel comfortable watching her.
At being a person.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, it's the genuine deal with her.
Oh, so it's not an act?
No.
Okay.
No, it's the real deal.
No,
with
I've
her.
Heard that. I've never met her. I've seen her play a few times.
Yeah.
She's really phenomenal.
Yeah.
So what's the story with that?
Well, she wanted to do a project that embraced a little bit of her Latino roots, you know? So, and she, you know, what she had done before had been pretty much lumped into pop or the Americana kind of bin, all the albums that she'd worked on before. And so she wanted to do a little bit of a departure. Her first album she actually made had Victor Krause and Bill Frisell on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Seven Angels on a Bicycle, it's called. And, so she got them back into the fold, and her producer is Lee Townsend. I think he's produced everything she's done, and he's really wonderful too. He's produced a lot of amazing stuff. So she's doing a mixed language album, basically. So there's some boleros and some rancheras and stuff on there.
Nice.
But she didn't want to make it a reenactment of things that have already been done. She didn't want to try and do anything that was traditional. She just wanted to have something that was kind of more vital to her, and so just a mixture of things, you know.
That's hard to do, isn't it?
Well,
take something, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Especially if you're taking things that are so kind of steeped in a tradition.
Yeah.
To do them without, I mean, I'm a big fan of bastardization. It's hard. I'm not a purist about anything. You know, but it is hard.
You listening to you play, and I went through the David Polkingham Plays Guitar albums, and you have to have been pretty steeped in whatever tradition you were learning, because even like if you want to fuck around with something,
right,
you got to really know it well before you.
I think it's either you have to know absolutely nothing, or you have to know a shit ton. That's kind of like, because there's the naivete of,
yeah,
and that's what you get with some young kids where you're like, how did they come up with that? And that's like that whole,
yeah,
and that's the freshness, that's the beauty of that, you know. So yeah, I mean, I've steeped myself quite a bit in a lot of music, and that's, but it never comes out, you know, traditional necessarily. Yeah. There's always like, there's, I guess it's just the filter of me, or you know, that changes it somewhat.
Yeah.
But it is hard to play things that are that recognized and that kind of steeped in a tradition, and trying to reinvigorate them and change them around. It can be challenging.
Did she bring all you guys together to do that together, or did the producer and she and the producer really have an idea? Lee, you said his name was?
Lee Townsend. It was a wonderful session in that there was no rehearsals.
Old school.
We all just sat down, and we did it at Arlen. We all just sat down and started playing the songs. And we'd play and we'd play. We'd find parts. We'd just mess around. And then you'd hear in the cans Lee go, I think you found it. We're cutting now. You know, that it was that kind of thing.
That's so cool.
It was so cool. There were some moments where I actually had to stop playing because just what was happening felt so organic. And just so full of, like, so vital, so full of just spirit, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you get Bill Frisell on something like that, you're automatically turning the corner away from that traditional approach.
Right, yeah. You know?
She had me there to play nylon string and stuff like that if we needed the nod to the tradition more.
Right.
You know? But there's a lot of kind of like, you know, taking some of that, some of the rancheros or boleros, and you know, if you put kind of a surf guitar mentality on them, that's a really nice way to go with it. So like those kind of directions happen too, you know.
Always reminds me of like there's this weird, and I guess it comes from the Moors taking over Spain. Is that weird Middle Eastern?
Yeah, the north,
slant to the
North African stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, and like Dick Dale.
Yeah,
to me, like that's where they meet. When you just said that guy has this, some weird like Middle Eastern shit going on, like with the surf rock.
Yeah, da 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 da,
yeah,
da da da,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, all of that. Yeah, totally.
That shit's awesome.
Totally, yeah.
Where are you from?
I was born in Houston.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
that's good.
Down in the Third Ward, and I left when I was four. I grew up all over the place. Like mom, like daddy, got the bandana on the stick. You guys suck. I'll see you later.
Two peanut butter sandwiches and an apple.
Actually, I did threaten to run away one time, and my dad offered to help pack. That was a good one.
I think I think we're probably like around the same age because I think I was met with the same exact.
Yeah.
Sure. You want some help?
You might need some food. Should we make some sandwiches? Yeah.
Don't forget to take a coat. It's cold out there today.
Oh, psychological warfare. It's great.
So Houston, and then you moved. But it says you were first published when you were four?
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, my dad was a preacher. My mom, a musician. And my dad started this kind of a communal living experiment in Houston around this church that he was stationed at in the mid-60s. And he ended up getting like, you know, having coffee houses every night and a lot of the Jesus hippie kids, you know, in their late teens and early 20s were flocking to it and writing songs and all that. And eventually the neighborhood turned around. People started moving to this neighborhood instead of, I mean, there was big time white flight going on at the time. There were gangs and drugs, and it was not a good neighborhood. And so the neighborhood kind of turned around. CBS did a special on them. And so they started this thing called the Community of Celebration. And at one point, I guess the biggest it ever got was about 120 people all living together, sharing everything. There were people who worked outside of the community, and they would pitch their payroll into the kitty, and then those who didn't would work inside the community doing whatever. The main industry was music. They had a band. Actually, there were probably two or three incarnations of the band that would travel internationally called the Fisher Folk, and they made about 34 albums. And
that is awesome.
Yeah, and I wrote a song when I was four, and they ended up publishing it. You know, I was on my first recording session probably at age 7, around there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you grew up in that commune?
Yeah. Yeah. Until I was 14, thereabouts, at which point in time they were moving around a bunch going, because I spent from the age of 4 to 12 in the UK, primarily in Scotland. And
because they were there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different bishops kind of got wind of what my dad was doing and was like, hey, come over here and set up shop and do it here. And so they kind of seeded these little communities.
Was it an offshoot of some other major brand religion
Episcopal.
Or something? Okay.
Yeah, or over in England or in Scotland, it was Anglican.
Okay.
But yeah, the Episcopal Church. Yeah.
Wow.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was for me, it was an awesome way to grow up. I grew up just around a lot of musicians, a lot of artists.
And it wasn't like a druggy cult.
It wasn't. You know, wherever we'd always move to new places, especially like in Britain, and the local people would be like, you know, a bunch of like free love, you know, American hippies.
Yeah.
I mean, there was macrame and patchouli and the whole deal.
But it was the '70s. You couldn't escape that.
You couldn't escape that. You know, and they all said it was like a free love cult and all this stuff. And then I was fight tooth and nail, you know, saying, no, we're sanctioned by the Anglican Church within the umbrella of the Episcopal, you know, but humans are humans. And you know, it turns out there was a lot of gays and lesbians there that I grew up with. And it was an alternative lifestyle. At that point in time, you couldn't be out.
Yeah.
You know, so it was an alternative lifestyle that they could be in that was still kind of under the umbrella of a recognized, you know, institution. And so, yeah.
I always that's always a tough thing to reconcile in your mind is like gay people that are Republicans or religious there, mm-hmm. it's tough for them to fit in somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, especially when you've got that level of kind of self-loathing and shaming going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No.
You know?
No. So where you moved out when you were 14?
They were moving back overseas.
Okay.
And they, you know, I just moved back to Houston, then to Colorado, and then they were going back to Britain. They didn't think I'd be there long enough for me to graduate. I was like 14. I would have probably been put back a year in the school system over there. It just started getting really complicated. I ended up getting a full ride to an Episcopal boarding school in South Florida.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, in Boca Raton.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So,
what years were you there?
From 83 to 86.
Okay. Yeah. I moved there to Miami in 85.
Yeah, that's right. I think I did remember I knew that about you. Yeah, I was in Boca.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Living the dream. So what? There was an Episcopal boarding school in Boca Raton. That's mm-hmm. just so, what a weird, what did you guys do for fun?
Oh.
Like,
well,
is there stuff to do in Boca or did you have to leave?
Well, there's just the beach and surfing.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I was
a lot of 90-year-old women to me.
It's hot. It's hot.
A lot of cougars.
No, those are saber-toothed tigers, my friend. it was great for me. I was the charity case there, you know, like they were
the full ride guy.
They were very good to me. Yeah.
That's good. They didn't make fun of you or be mean to you.
No, no. I mean, some of my best friends that I've had for the duration of my time since are from them.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a lot of friends that say, you know, they lived on Delray Beach, you know, in this palatial mansion, and their parents would sign off that they would be my weekend guardians, and that like every Friday at 2:30 when school is over, I could just hook a cab, even if my friend wasn't there, and stay at their house on the beach and surf all weekend and get back
awesome.
To school by 10 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was a real fun time for me.
Were you what were you thinking you were going to do with your life? Were you thinking you were going to do music? Or?
I was like writing songs and playing guitar. I'd never studied guitar. I'd been forced to kind of study piano. My mom's a pretty high-powered pianist. And I played flute. I studied flute growing up, and I was in boy choir and all of that. And guitar for me was like, you're not allowed to tell me what to do on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah.
So I just would
freedom.
Make... Yeah, I would just make chords up and things that I liked and make up songs and stuff. And I was doing that all through high school, kind of increasingly. And then I went to Tufts University outside of Boston for a couple of years and was studying comparative religion because that's a big interest for me. But really, I was just playing in a band.
So, but you didn't think you were going to go on and follow like in your dad's footsteps?
No, no. It's more kind of an anthropological, sociological fascination I had. I mean, I was convinced I was Buddhist for a while, and then, you know, I was just studying all the. I was kind of trying to, I guess, searching.
Yeah.
You know, because I bought and sold this and swallowed this bill of goods from my childhood.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard not to. It was very intoxicating being around that level of. That many people living
faith.
Together, a,
yeah.
a faithful, purposeful existence. It was a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
You know? But I think it's every kid's job to reject that. What
At some point, yeah.
At some point, yeah, and, yeah, and yeah. come to it on their own terms.
Yeah.
So that was kind of part of my that journey for me.
Are your parents still around?
My father died about 23 years ago. My mom's still around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's good. She's cool.
She's great. She turns 87 this week.
Wow.
She lives in North Carolina. She's living in her own house and playing piano, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's,
yeah, you guys play together still? Like, do you ever jam out? Do you hang out together?
Yeah, when I go, yeah, God, I go cool. when that's so the family's awesome. Together. It's like it's a little bit kind of the Von Trapps. It's like instant 4-part harmony. Everybody's singing. I'm the youngest of 6.
Oh wow!
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did any of them choose rock professional or music professional?
No, they all play. But none of them, they're all smarter than that. They're doctors and lawyers and professors and shit.
So they have fun playing music. It's not like some torturing.
Yeah, exactly.
Experience.
Yeah, they don't have the pressure of trying to put bread on the table with it, but you know.
So then you made the decision to go to University of North Texas?
I did, yeah, because I was just playing in a band and I'd gotten to the place where I realized I sucked on guitar. Like, it's that thing of like you hear something. And you want to play it, and it takes you a week to find it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, so this whole self-expression thing has been nice.
Yeah.
But there are things I hear that I want to do, and I couldn't do them. So I decided I should be serious about it. I should get a piece of paper so that I can teach. You know, I figured I should get a degree rather than just like stop school altogether and hit the streets. And, you know, it made more sense to me to put the time in. And learn and get a degree and be able to fall back on teaching then if I need to, which was a smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's what brought me to Austin. I got a job teaching it at St. Stephen's School.
Oh, cool.
Which is a lot like the school, the boarding school I went to.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're both Episcopal schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My friend, you know Darren and Trish?
Yes, of course.
Their nephew went there.
Went there, yeah.
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 So that's what you got that job and you moved down here just right after college?
Yeah.
When was that? Like the mid 90s?
That was 93.
93?
Yeah, it was shortly after. I went and hung out with my mom, my grandmother for a little while in North Carolina after I graduated. My father had just died,
right.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I graduated. But I got the it was back in the Yellow Pages days before all the computer stuff. I'm like my sister, I was like, send me the Yellow Pages for all the parochial schools.
Yeah.
And sent them all out my resume, and St. Stephen's needed a guitar teacher.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what did you start doing out? Like, you started teaching, but then you also started playing out?
I started playing. Yeah. I have this newly minted jazz performance degree in my hand.
Yeah.
And so I came, and, you know, I was like going to the Elephant Room wanting to be a serious jazz musician, and it just, it wasn't very fulfilling. Maybe I wasn't the best at it. But I also just would kind of looked out and would see 10 or 12 old kind of sour white dudes in the audience. That was the sum total of me trying to play jazz, you know, here. Or, you know, pick up gigs and stuff like that. But then I was asked to play with this band, Tom Air, which was a dance band.
Yeah.
And they had a horn player to solo, but he couldn't make the gig. So last minute, a friend said, hey, he was Luis Guerra, the bass player.
Mm-hmm.
In that band, he was like, Can you, he and Jimmy were good friends. Can you come and just solo? Because our guy who plays solos is not here. So I just showed up, you know, and they would turn to me and I would improvise over these, you know, salsa tunes and stuff like that. And then that just totally blew my mind. I was like, where the hell is one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This
yeah,
music,
yeah, yeah.
you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
which, And when you start getting into that level of that language, it becomes for me super mystical like that. It was amazing. And then I also saw the joyful expression of dance.
Yeah.
That happened. And I was like, this is so much more, it felt so much more vital to me.
Yeah.
And then going and playing jazz, you know.
Yeah.
It was, and I could still improvise and still, you know, kind of get that aspect.
Express yourself.
Get that aspect of it. But the whole thing is you're making people's butts move.
Yeah.
And then you get a bunch of beautiful women out, and then you get a bunch of guys drinking to get up. Then courage to ask.
You're making money.
Then you've got a happy bar. And then,
yeah.
Yeah. That's the remedy right there. Recipe. Yeah.
So what all did you guys, tour around or did you?
Tamer?
Yeah. Or did you?
We did. We ended up getting on the, we got picked up by Davis McLarty.
Uh-huh.
You know, his booking agency. Yeah. And he didn't really know. We were the only, like, one of these is not like the other.
Right. Type,
you know. He was like, I'll do my best. So he ended up kind of putting us in the jam band circuit from Colorado to Georgia. So we would do that maybe twice a year.
But that works there.
It was, totally. Yeah, it worked. I mean, we were doing, the thing about that band is that we were doing really well just in town.
Yeah.
Because we could play the jazz club and we'd play more of a jazz night. We could play like the White Rabbit and play more of a rock funk.
Yeah.
We could play Miguel's La Bodega and play salsa all night.
And then the Ritz.
So, yeah, and then the Ritz, yeah. Which was anything goes. So, I mean, as a band, we would play four nights a week in Austin and still have people coming out. And we did that for a good, five, 6 years straight, you know, and ended up being able to cobble together a living for a six-piece band here in Austin.
It's hard to do.
Very hard to do. It would be even harder now, I think.
Sure.
Back then, we were kind of one of the only games in town.
Yeah.
For that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. And at the same time, it was becoming very popular in the mainstream.
It was becoming, right after that kind of the resurgence of the swing thing.
That's what I was going to say, is like all of a sudden, like traditional dance became important.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was really interesting. We made an album, which never got released. It was one of my kind of babe in the woods moments of the music industry where this guy comes up. He's like, I want to sign you. The swing thing's on its way out. I know the Latin thing's next. And he was right. Like, one of Vista Social Club got released within the year.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, I'm not going to make money if you don't make money. The most important thing is the iron is hot. We have to strike. I've booked studio time. I'm going to give you a 5-page contract. It's going to be simple. Let's go record an album. Let's make some money.
Yeah.
And I'm all like, okay, let's go. Yeah. You know, so we went in, we recorded, it was a really good album, actually, because it was basically the Christian Fernandez and Jose Galliano. He was the percussionist in the band. And at that point...
Oh, I love that guy.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's got, like, one of the best feels in the world.
Totally.
And everybody was green except for him and Christian, and so we all just basically did what they told us. And the album was wonderful. It had a real, you know, it had a real form. And so we made the album, and we get like a 50-page contract from this guy. And it's a production deal, and he wants half the rights to everything and all this stuff. And we're like, we didn't sign up for this. We're not going to do that. And he says, all right, well, if you have 25 grand, you can have the masters. So, yeah. But that was right when the Latin dance thing was
explosion.
Just about to kick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sad ending to that story.
Well, yeah. it was educational, shall we say.
Yeah.
You know, it took us about another 2.5 years to make our own album.
Okay.
At that point in time, you know. But it was very instructional.
Yeah.
Circumstance.
Were you playing also like as a sideman with other people at that time?
For a while there, like I moved to Austin and I was like, give yourself 5 years, can you make a living type thing between teaching and playing. And then I taught on and off at St. Stephen's and also at South Austin Music. But then I started getting really busy playing. And for a while there, it's like I was in 6 or 7 bands playing like 11 gigs a week in Austin. I was doing some other projects. I got super burned out.
Yeah.
It was like a little little mouse in a wheel, you know?
Yeah.
And right about that time is when the Alejandro gig came along.
Yeah. There was a lot of guys. I remember seeing guys like JJ play three gigs in a night and shit like that. Exactly. Then. Like, and just go to all three of them. Like,
yeah, yeah, just follow him around.
Kind of just to see if he's going to make it.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was... There's not as much of that now, is there?
Like, I don't think so. I mean, and it's interesting, you know, the whole jobber thing, you know, where there are musicians out there who that's what they do. They're just hustling from gig to gig. You know, I mean, like, Brandon Temple, he's one. He's always working.
Yeah,
a couple times a night, you know, and a lot of them are his projects.
Yeah,
that's the difference. Is it used to be a little bit more that they were jobbers and they just like the highest pay. I follow that.
Right.
You know, which I guess I don't see quite that much of now as much as I did before.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's because there's just a lot more musicians.
A lot less money.
And a lot less, yeah.
You might as well just do what makes you happy because it's going to be $20.
Yeah, exactly.
So instead of being disappointed, like do something that you would have done for free.
Yeah.
And then be like, oh shit, $20, awesome.
Yeah. But I was like, if you're a horn player or something, then it's like, okay, well, you know, this band has a two-piece horn section that I'm a part of, and then I can cut across down and sit in with this band, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I see that in that arena a little bit more, you know. But yeah, there's like twice or three times as many people as there were playing on the scene, you know, in the 90s. So, yeah.
So when you got into the Alejandro thing, then you played on his records,
mm-hmm.
and you were in the you were in the orchestra and mm-hmm. also the rock and roll band. And...
Yeah. Yeah. For a while, when he first hired me, it was just, he did the string quintet thing with, you know, two violins, cello or two cellos, violin, me and him.
Right.
And acoustic. And then he was like, dude, do you rock? To which I said, yes, but I'd never played rock before. I played with him. So
that's weird, because I saw you play a few times with them, and I wouldn't have believed that.
Yeah, no, I learned. I went to the School of Rock with Alejandro Escovedo.
That's a great guy to go with.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is indeed. I learned a lot.
You know, I bet.
Absolutely. It was a great thing.
Yeah.
To be able to stand next to him and just kind of feel that swagger and that power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be a part of that.
Yeah.
That band.
Yeah.
You got to play some shows with Bruce Springsteen and stuff?
Got to play with Bruce a couple times. Opened up for him at the Harley Fest for like 75,000 people.
Wow.
And he came and sat in with us on a number of occasions. And yeah.
Did you ever get to talk to him?
Yeah.
Like, just like, mm-hmm. how's it going, Bruce?
Yeah, not...
You doing good, man?
Yeah.
Hanging in there?
What's up, B-man? No, I mean, I ended up kind of being in the same room as him quite often.
Yeah.
And say, you know, it, you know, be the kind of the, hey, how you doing? I'm doing good. How you doing? You know, but never like sit there and, you know, look in the eye and dial in with him and, you know, and have like any kind of really meaningful exchange. There's always a lot of people around, a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know.
And there is that kind of thing sometimes, like whenever I've been around people of extreme importance, when I don't have a direct reason for being there, I kind of get a little quieter.
Yeah.
And don't try to engage because I feel like I want to be this guy. It's like,
yeah, they're beleaguered with people who want to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a really good guy. He's a real down to earth. You know, there's a smile for everybody, and he seems to me just like a really good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he happens also to be one of the most famous people in the world.
Yeah.
You know.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's totally weird.
Mm-hmm.
What about, how did you get the gig with Robert Plant? Through Patty?
Well, kind of. I recorded with Patty on her Mil Besos album.
Uh-huh.
Like 13 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And
I remember that.
That's when I first met her.
Okay.
And then we have a mutual friend in Liz Lambert, who, you know, the San Jose and the St. Cecilia. And she lives in my neighborhood, and we're good friends. And so there's a lot of times where Liz will call me and go, hey, what are you doing? Come over tonight for dinner, you know? And then inevitably there's somebody, you know, like Robert Plant at dinner, you know?
Right, right.
So that's how I first met him. And then we'd hang out and we'd be up until like 1 a.m. drinking wine and playing guitar and laughing. And so then when he wanted to do these shows for Michael Fricasso benefit, uh-huh. You know, because he had broken his hand in a car wreck in the right. middle of a tour.
Right.
He called me up and was like, Dave, would you play with me? And I was like, let me check my calendar, Robert.
That's fucking rad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, I did that. And
were
then,
you a Zeppelin fan growing up at all?
Or? Yeah, you know, my favorite thing was Led Zeppelin 3.
Wow.
The acoustic one. That's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I kind of was a weirdo, I think, when I was a kid. For a while, if it wasn't acoustic, I didn't like it. Like, I went through that. I loved all things acoustic.
Sure.
You know, and I've always loved, you know, bands like Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and all that. But I would always kind of gravitate to the more acoustic things.
Right.
For some reason as a kid. So I'd listened to it my whole life. But like I said, I never played rock. I never played in a rock cover band. I never learned anybody's rock songs. You know, I ended up being in a cover band when I was in Tom Air. But that was songs from different countries. That they might as well have been originals.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd never done that, which was really interesting in playing with Robert because he didn't want Page's licks there. And he didn't want a recreation of Led Zeppelin.
Did you do any Zeppelin songs?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we did like 8 of them.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Like Tangerine, Black Dog. What is and what should never be, going to California. We did a bunch of them.
Wow.
But he didn't want, like, Ramble On. He's like, Dave, it's a folk song now.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
You know? So, which was great because I have the DNA of those songs in me from listening my whole life, but I'd never copped the licks.
Right.
And I think if I had been an absolute devotee and been copping the licks my whole life, it might have been hard to divorce myself from them.
Yeah.
Playing those songs, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what he didn't want to have a representation of what Led Zeppelin used to do, you know?
He's really good about that.
Yeah.
You know what else I like about him? He doesn't do the songbook or whatever. Like,
right, yeah.
He's not doing like Frank Sinatra songs now like some of the like other guys
Rod
are.
Stewart
like
Rod and all, Stewart, yeah. Yeah, like going that direction. Yeah, no,
he's still trying to do something different that he's never done.
Yeah, he's still exploring, which is great.
Yeah.
And the fact that he won't, you know, like everybody, of course, wants them to do the reunion. And he's like, it's not going to be the same without Bonzo. It won't ever be the same.
No, they did that one and whatever.
Yeah, but they didn't get JPJ on it. They didn't get John Paul Jones on it. It was just Page and Plant.
No, but they did that Zeppelin thing in 07.
Did
they? Yeah.
The three of them?
Uh-huh. With Jason Bonham.
Oh, that's right. They didn't do a whole tour, did they?
No, they did like two shows. One show or yeah, something ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, there's probably, I don't know, maybe at least 3,000 Led Zeppelin cover bands who sound just like Led Zeppelin
sure.
playing any night of the week in America.
Right. And the other thing about them is that... not that I don't think, I just think that once you, when you sing that fucking high in your 20s, yeah. I don't know how you can do it in your 60s, just physically.
Yeah, and that was the great thing about him and Patty together. She would do all that, and he would take a tenor line underneath.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and
there's nothing wrong with that. That's,
no.
You know, the thing is he's growing up, like McCartney does that same thing. He's still mm-hmm. making music and,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
trying to do something different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, yeah. I really admire Robert for that. I mean,
yeah,
he just
me
always
too.
Always exploring, and his band is a hoot. The Sensational Space Sifters,
yeah, they're the one that's out now.
Yeah,
yeah,
they're just a fun bunch of blokes.
Yeah,
you know, you get the impression that he really just wants a good hang.
Yeah,
you know.
Someone, I think Alejandro said that about you in one of the press things that I was reading.
Yeah, yeah.
And I talk about this all the time with people, like, not that you're not amazing, because you are fucking amazing. Like, you're a monster. I don't know how you say it, dude, like a shredder. You're the shit. Like, you're an amazing guitar player. But The gigs, when you get gigs and you got to be in a van or locked in a room with someone for a while, or in a bus or whatever, you got to see someone every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll take somebody that, you know, might not be as much of a virtuoso, someone that's, that's just better to hang out with.
Yeah, I don't care if you're Mozart, if you're a dick all the time, I don't want to be around
you. I'm sure Robert Plant's at the point now where he doesn't want to, like, you don't have time to have some asshole in his band.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, there's not enough hours in the day for that.
Yeah. You know? So you're lucky you get to tour with one of the great hangs, Billy Harvey.
Yes. Yeah, he's a good guy.
nobody makes me laugh.
Yep.
Like that guy. I don't think that I can talk to him for more than 3 minutes without laughing.
A belly laugh involved.
Yeah.
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 He's a good one. Craig Ross is good for that too.
Yeah.
They both are.
I haven't seen him in a long time. I really love that guy.
Yeah.
Remember that album he made, Dead Spy Report? Do you ever listen to that?
You know, I need to lay my hands on it because everyone talks about it, but I have not heard it.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good.
He's a wonderful musician.
How did you cross paths with Patty?
It was during it was Michael Ramos got me to play on that Mil Besos track.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah. That's when I first met Carrie Rodriguez. She was on that same session.
Okay.
Actually, yeah. Wow. Yeah, so that was, when was that? That was like 2000, maybe? 2001?
I think so, because I was still married and to Tracy, who was working with her a lot.
Right.
And I remember that like listening to that when she first finished it and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did Ramos produce that record?
He produced one track on it.
That song.
The title track.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That was her. That was a huge record for her. You know, it had Rain on it.
Yeah.
All of these amazing songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful song. So when did you start playing with her? Like going on the road?
It would have been right after that Continental thing we did with her and Robert. She had a guy named Doug Lancio who's a guitarist for a long time.
Yeah.
And
that guy was fucking great and super cool too.
Yeah, great guy. And he ended up getting the John Hiatt
gig
and going and doing that. So she was in need of a guitar player, and so she called up and she's like, "Would you be interested in touring?" And I said, "Absolutely." Because it had been about, I don't know, 8 months, 6 to 8 months before that I'd stopped playing with Alejandro and was, you know, looking for some good work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a great gig.
It's wonderful. You know, it's, she's a dear soul and I love her.
Yeah, she's a really nice person.
And she moves me. What she does, it really moves me. It hits me in a certain place. And it's also very organic and changes a lot.
Yeah.
You know, which I like that.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, how I met her was she moved. She was dating Troy Campbell.
Yeah, yeah.
And she like moved in down the street, and I was real good friends with Troy.
Yeah.
And when I met her, she was Troy's pretty shy girlfriend that had just moved here from somewhere else. I can't even remember where she had moved from. And Troy was like, "Oh yeah, you should come and see this thing she's doing." I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah." And people would be like, "Oh yeah, she's a great, you know, songwriter and all this stuff," and I was like, "Well, shit." So I went and saw her, and I was just like, fuck.
"Yeah!"
Like the hair on my arms just was standing up for 1 hour straight. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. She has that.
Yeah,
she has that in spades. And she's a great hang.
Yeah,
and a real joy to be around. And yeah,
I spent 9/11 with her.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, a lot of that day. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, that, I remember she had an artist's response to 9/11 gathering at her house that I was at too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was pretty amazing. Just a bunch of people making music.
Oh, that's kinda cool.
Yeah, yeah.
When you said that, I was like, "Do you guys get together and like write a letter or make a YouTube video or something?" Like,
no,
we don't like this. What happened?
Yes, this is categorically bad. No.
Thank God it's been time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it wasn't funny at all.
No, it wasn't at all. It was insane. No, it was like, you know, there was like John D. Graham, Sean Colvin, Eliza Gilkinson, a bunch of singer-songwriters, musicians, just playing music.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
So after you do these shows, these release shows,
yeah,
then you go out on tour with...
with Patty.
Patty. Mm-hmm. Basically until November. Are you doing anything of yours during that time?
No, I won't really have time. I'm pretty sewn up. Because she releases an album in September.
Right.
A new album.
Were you on the album?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Who produced it?
Craig. Craig Ross.
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all local people. Me and Scrappy Judd are...
No way!
Uh-huh.
And, I love Scrappy Judd.
Yep. Yeah. And Conrad is on it. The only person who's not local is a guy named John Dedrick, who played piano. He's a Nashville guy. He played piano for her for a long, long time.
Okay.
And speaking of funny guys.
He's funny?
Oh, my God. He's like Robin Williams level.
Oh, I like that stuff.
Yeah. Really, and really fun to tour with and all that. But, I'm going to be really quite busy with her until like mid-November. So I'll probably do a show in December.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, no immediate huge hustling plans, you know.
It's understandable.
Yeah.
It's interesting now when you put out an album, there's like, even before it comes out, there's only so much you can do, and you got to still think realistically about life. You know what I mean?
This is the truth. And also these days it's like, it's the truth. And these days a CD is almost like a lost leader in marketing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so here's this guy, and he's done all this, he's done this, he's done this, and he's made CDs, and he writes songs, and he comes up with arrangements, and, you know, all of that, and you just keep building your cachet and filling it up more and more.
Right.
And I think, you know, if I was in my 20s, I might get in a car and book a, you know, regional tour type thing, you know, but it's like, at this point in time, yeah, I've got a awesome career doing the Sideman thing, and and making a CD only kind of enriches my whole bag, you know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, of course, be averse if somebody says, "Hey, will you do opening? You know, an opening run."
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Of course, I would. If it was possible, I'd hop on it in a minute. You know. But mostly, it's just a matter of getting it, making something, and putting it out there. At this point.
You know, and you know what. Some people, I mean, obviously, everything has changed so much.
Yeah.
And making your own music, like before in the 80s, you could make your tape and go play in Corpus and, and live.
Yeah.
I mean, not a great living, but you could live.
Yeah.
And now it's like the business had to be decimated to start over. And now that it's starting over, it's hard to find your footing. But those of us that are kind of too old to kind of go back to school or whatever kind of thing. You got to hang on to what you got. And I mean, it's weird. I was talking to someone just yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, you go out and tour with Skyrocket, and you make a living playing that way. And I'm like, we're not selling a record.
Right.
Like, we're like a good caterer.
Right.
Like, you invite us to the party because we can get everyone dancing.
Get everyone moving.
This guy, the caterer, is going to feed them all. Then we're really good at doing this thing that's like the good time.
Right.
Kind of at post-dessert dance-off thing.
Yeah.
And, but it's different than the music business.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely.
And it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of, it's harder as you get older because there's expectations you used to have when you make an album.
Mm-hmm.
Not even like that you'd end up like rich or anything, but that all these people would gravitate to it and it would be special.
Right.
But now it's just like really nothing special about an album.
Okay, see ya. I mean, that's pretty much it. Everyone's making them. Everybody has a studio. You know, it's all out there. People aren't really buying them anymore. They're going for individual downloads
Some people are really mad about it, but I look at it as like the democratization of art.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you are, yes, everyone can do it. And yes, there are a lot of people out there that are doing it that should probably not be doing it.
Same thing with books, same thing with
movies.
Any creative endeavor. This is something I think about a lot because I've taught guitar and taught music on and off for a long time. And if I have that hat on, music belongs to everybody.
Yeah.
And anything that facilitates young people expressing themselves in music, I'm all for.
Yeah.
So you have a bunch of kids that don't even have to play an instrument. And they know a computer program.
Yeah.
And they can cobble together songs by sampling and all this stuff. And it's a creative, expressive endeavor on their part.
And it's art.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. And who's to say?
Who's to say?
It is or isn't.
Yeah. And mostly it's not even approaching it from that viewpoint. It's more approaching it from the viewpoint of anything that enables people to express themselves and be creative.
Yes.
Is a winner.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, that's, you're right. It's a great democratization of those things, you know? But it's a weird one.
It's not always great.
No, it's exactly. Well, it's a double-edged sword of like the internet. It's like this great power for good, but some super, super dark shit out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah.
How do you feel about the internet? I notice you have a Facebook, but you're not on Twitter.
I'm being pulled, kicking and screaming into the internet,
yeah,
worldwide interwebs. I have you know, I got my Facebook page and I just got on Instagram. Mm-hmm. There's something that's creepy about it to me,
dude. Totally.
That I find sometimes distasteful.
Yes.
You know, and there's something about the
self-promotion,
the shameless self-promotion that just leaves a really bad taste in my mouth, and I would prefer not to engage. So that being said, I just got an Instagram thing, and I'm releasing
Everyone
an album.
Go like my page?
Exactly, I'm releasing an album, and here's the other great thing. It's like it used to be like, well, how do I get the word out about this album? You know, how else can I get a couple thousand people to know about this? Well, I would have to go and mail out a bunch of things, you know,
and
take a lot of time.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. And now I make a sentence and post a picture and a song and click something, and there it is.
People get it,
yeah.
How do you record those David Polkingham Plays Guitar albums? Do you do those on your own?
No, I did one of them at the Church House Studio with David
awesome.
Boyle.
Yes.
Yeah, the first one. And then the next one was done at that Ohm studio.
Okay.
But it's just me in a room with some microphones. And
nice mics.
And a guitar, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, man.
Thank you.
I really do.
Thank you. It's like, that was, that's one of my favorite things to do. Like, if I have absolutely nothing on my agenda, and I wake up in the morning and put on a pot of coffee, making arrangements of songs, beautiful songs that I love, is just, it's endlessly rewarding to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
Does it take anything? Do you have to ask permission, or they're all traditional?
No. I on a lot of these, you pay royalty on. Yeah. I mean, there's some, you know, like, say, London Derriere, which that's in the public domain now.
Right.
I think another one of the gospel ones I do is public domain.
Didn't you do I've Been Working on the Railroad?
That's public domain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But a lot of them, like, I just love that a Brazilian style of music called choro. And that a lot of those, they're written sometime between, like, maybe the 20s and the 50s.
Yeah.
So they're still, you still have to.
Do you ever play with Susanna Schauffele?
It threatened to happen a couple times.
I bet you guys would do something really new.
Yeah, no, but I've been a fan of hers for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Great. Yeah, she's great.
Anything that you're not, how's the new Patty record? Is it amazing?
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
And it comes out in September?
Comes out in September. It was another one of those super organic, everybody just sitting there playing, you know. It's great too, because she does, you know, that, we did that whole thing, you know, normally, you know, scratch guitar, scratch piano, make sure everything, and then go in, none of that. It's like, this is the vocal, this is the guitar track, we're going with that. You know, how many takes? We did maybe 3 takes. But just like the huge commitment of, nope, I'm not going to go back and re-sing anything. I'm not going to go back and replay anything. It is like, it's the immediate emotion everybody was feeling. That's what's there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great.
It's amazing. You know, there's still a lot of people doing records like that. I mean, that's kind of like, it's almost now like, you know, like vinyl.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back to doing it this way.
Yeah, there's
something about it.
There is something about it. And there's something, you know, like, I mean, the whole thing about like a click. it's very, very useful. But then again, if you like, I go up every night, I go and I play and we don't have a click.
Yeah.
Why would we change that, you know, to record?
Yeah.
You know, that way music does breathe more, you know. But there are also, of course, applications where the click is vital.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, there's something, there's definitely, for me, there's something about that kind of more old school approach that feels
good.
It feels warmer somehow.
There's a humanity to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and I do stuff on my, I mean, I've recorded records by myself where it's all piecemeal and I do that stuff. And I think there's validity in that.
Absolutely.
But there's something about people in a room communicating without any kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like channeling God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. If I think about, you know, some of my favorite stuff that, you know, and regardless of genre, a lot of it comes from that era before there was that kind of approach, the kind of pastiche approach to putting things together.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely love, you know, like a Manu Chao or somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Sure.
Endlessly entertaining to me.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, back to, you know, old jazz albums or old Cuban albums or even old rock albums where it was like there wasn't a click. There wasn't, you know, there was just guys banging it out.
Yeah.
And it's got a special spirit to it.
Yeah, it has a spirit. It has like a, you know, like a tangible vibe.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that shit, man.
Mm-hmm.
There was something I was going to... Oh, do you ever get to see bands like Money Chicha and stuff like that? Have you heard those guys?
You know, I have. I've heard them once.
You know, those brownout experiences?
Yeah, all of the spinoffs from the group, the Grupo band, yeah. Yeah, I've heard Brownout, Occulte Soul Sounds. Was that the other one? But I haven't seen much. I've been kind of gone a lot this year.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen much recently.
How was touring with Mavis Staples?
Oh man, just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a real deal.
Yeah.
You know, a huge spirit, kind of one of those people that makes you want to. Just being around her makes you want to be a better person in general. You know, she just kind of exudes that light about her.
That's nice.
Yeah, and still gets out there and just gives it, you know. She's 75, I think, now.
Wow.
Yeah. And, but yeah, a huge persona.
Yeah.
And a sweetheart. Yeah.
Well, when you guys go out with this Patty, the next Patty tour, it's just her? Or she's not opening for anyone. Or
it's just her. There's
it's all theaters and stuff. That's nice.
Yeah, there's in the spring, you know. I think February, March, and April we'll be doing a tour with I think Sarah Watkins and another artist and Patty. But until then, it's all just. Promotion for Servant of Love, her new album.
That's great. Are you guys going to Europe?
We are. We leave on the 4th of September.
Wow.
Go over, and then we go back over in January again.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You have a great year ahead of you.
I do. The next 6 months are sewn up.
Yeah.
You know, and gratefully so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I totally. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I don't think so.
Well, your album, Little Pearl, is absolutely gorgeous.
If you are
in New York tonight, the day that this comes out, Tuesday, August 25th, you can catch David and his band at the Rockwood Music Hall in New York City.
Correct.
And Saturday.
8:30.
Mm-hmm. And Saturday, August 29th at Strange Brew in Austin, Texas at 8:30 as well.
No, it's 7 o'clock on that one.
7 o'clock?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That one. Yeah.
So 7 o'clock at Strange Brew, 8:30 in New York.
Correct. Amundo.
And thank you for using Fonzie lingo.
Hey.
Man, thank you so much for coming. Your album is really, really brilliant. I'm very proud of you, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's been a blast to sit here and talk with you.
Yeah, yeah, likewise.
Time to raise your veil. I'm ready now. Ready to make this vow.
Yeah. David Polkingham, man. So great to So great to talk to him. His album, Little Pearl, came out last Friday, August 21st. He is playing tonight, Tuesday, August 25th, at Rockwood Music Hall in New York City at 8:30. He is playing Saturday, August 29th, at Strange Brew at 7 p.m. here in Austin, Texas. A great, great artist, man. He's got a great, great record. Get out there. Pick up this album, Little Pearl. We're going to hear the title track that features Tosca Strings and Patty Griffin. So that's coming up in just a second. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, when you're out there, going to davidpulkingham.com or looking him up on Facebook, you can always like our Facebook page. You can subscribe to this podcast on Twitter. You can also hear it on Stitcher and subscribe to it there. I mean, favorite it on Stitcher. And then a new show comes out every Tuesday and every Friday. So there you go. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, if you're in New York City tonight, you can go see David Polkingham tonight, Tuesday, August 25th at Rockwood Music Hall. That's a great place to play. I've played there quite a few times. And Saturday, of course, August 29th at Strange Brew at 7 p.m. here in Austin. If you're here, do that. If you're there, do that. Okay? David Polkingham. Here's a great song, Little Pearl, from his album, Little Pearl. All right? Let's get down.
Take a deep breath. Dive in the dark. Drop to a depth almost too far. Feel the pressure of time, the weight of the world. And you and I, we somehow find a little pearl.
Continent Street. Mountains erupt, centuries shift, there's no way to stop. What's in the earth unwind, right in the edge of the curl, you and I somehow find a little pearl.
So far, we may never find this light again. I wonder how we ever found it then. Shining little star, understand how this will start. One speck of sand stuck to my heart. Maybe one day we'll learn how to wait on the world. It's only a matter of time. Somehow find a little pearl. Little pearl. Little pearl. Little pearl.